How have you not seen this?
This is always to be your host, Dustin Meadows. Today I am joined by Brian Costman.
Hi.
A good friend of mine, a local musician, drums in a, what is it, Slipknot?
Yeah, Slipknot.
The Tethers and the Haymakers, correct?
Yeah.
Super talented guy, super handsome fella. And we just watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Robert Zemeckis directed live action animation. A film based on the book Who Censored Roger Rabbit by Gary K. Wolfe. Pretty sweet movie. Pretty memorable movie for me from my childhood. I remember growing up with this, watching this movie a lot. This was kind of my introduction to Bob Hoskins, a very amazing actor who fortunately is no longer with us. This movie also notable for featuring Disney and Warner Brothers characters together on screen for the very first time. So there's that, and of course a nightmare fuel kind of a performance from Christopher Lloyd as the film's villain. We'll get into all that here shortly, but yeah, a well-known film. Pretty high-profile director Robert Zemeckis. If you lived in the suburbs as a child, they did the thing in Clockwork Orange where they toothpick your eyes open and make you watch this. So, with all those things in consideration, Brian, how have you not seen this?
I don't know what I want to attribute it to. I think growing up, my parents actually were always kind of anti-violence, whether it was cartoon or real. And there's a large portion of things that I missed out on. I wouldn't say missed out on, but that I wasn't exposed to.
Until later
in my life. And I think that this film falls into that category, along with things like X-Men, the animated series.
Oh, no shit.
And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
The cartoon?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was a different life. Plus, I grew up without cable, so that was another thing.
Oh, okay. Makes sense. So what kind of things were permissible to watch in the Costman household? Is it just Little House on the Prairie and Highway to Heaven with Michael Landon and that stuff? Was the Costman household just the PAX channel? Is it just Touched by an Angel reruns?
Touched by an Angel, oddly enough, was a staple.
Of course it was. What about Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman?
That, I loved that show. Mainly for Sully.
Oh, Sully was pretty dope. Sully was pretty dope.
I don't know, I think, well, I grew up, probably my favorite show growing up, there was, The Adventures of Superman, or The Adventures of Lois and Clark.
Oh, with Dean Cain, Terry Hatcher?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was pretty great. There were some other things that a lot of people watched too, like Dinosaurs, the series. That was great.
Okay.
Movies. I don't really know. I mean, we watched a lot of stuff. Just my parents were very anti-violence.
Gotcha.
So
your parents were fucking nerds.
Yeah, but they're really great people, and if they ever hear this, I don't want them to think that I feel slighted in the least.
That's fair. That's a very sweet thing to say about your parents.
They're very sweet people.
Brian's parents, if you're listening, I'm going to shove you into a fucking locker if I ever meet you for being goddamn nerds. So why don't you go play with Magic the Gathering or whatever it is you nerds do? No, that makes sense. That's been a fairly popular reason a lot of people haven't seen things on the show. A lot of parental influence in youth. So now that we have sat through it, now we've watched it, what did you think?
It's great. You know, you mentioned, you know, the fact that it's the first time that you see Warner Brothers and Disney characters on screen together, which, you know, once I got older and was, I mean, to this day, I love cartoons. You know, Miyazaki is a huge influence on me, and I love his work, and, but, you know, so is... Tom and Jerry. I love Tom and Jerry to death. And while you don't see them in this, you see the influence that that cartoon had on on so many things. But I was kind of thinking, like, it's like the girl talk of of cartoons. It's just the mashup of all these things that you, as someone who loves cartoons, you never think of seeing together.
Yeah.
Just like you never think you'd hear Elton John singing over 1979 by the Smashing Pumpkins.
Mm.
But it works.
But there it is.
There it is. It's been done.
Yeah. There's some really great bits they do with the cartoons. Personally, one of my favorites is a pretty obvious one. It's the dueling pianos between Donald and Daffy Duck. That's an amazing scene, and that's always one of my favorites, the interplay between them. There's another one, like, one of my favorite little quick hit kind of sight gags, is right when Eddie Valiant, Bob Hoskins' character, first leaves, the Maroon Cartoon Studios, and you see the brooms from Fantasia, and there's, an actual non-cartoon dude who's playing that song from the Sorcerer's Apprentice segment on the saxophone while they're doing.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really funny bit. And then, like, immediately, like, it kind of, like, does, like, that, almost like that tracking shot from the Robert Altman's The Player, where, like, it follows him going, and, like, you see all these aspects of, like, studio life and how the cartoon and the real world kind of interact with each other. And my favorite gag is right after that, too. You see all those cows in line for the cattle call, and they're all doing these different variations on moo, like the way you would see people doing multiple line readings, like outside of a commercial audition, like moo, moo, moo. It's really funny. It also kind of makes you think how ridiculous actors are.
Yeah,
I was like, nah, that's pretty good takedown of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun. And I think, I mean, I remembered some stuff from seeing it here and there on TV, but this is the first time I ever sat down and watched the whole thing, so it's good.
Okay, definitely glad we were able to make you do that.
Yeah.
There's some other things too, some of the other characters. Baby Herman is a great character.
That is a great character.
Baby Herman, this stogie smoking baby who behaves just like a disgusting construction worker from the 30s.
Hey, Toots!
It's been a while since I've watched this, and I forgot how little Baby Herman is actually in it.
Yeah.
It really is, it's only the two scenes. It's the very beginning, the Baby Herman cartoon, which is fucking hilarious.
Right.
And again, does a really great job right out the gate of kind of encapsulating all the tropes you come to expect from, like, those Tom and Jerry and those Looney Tunes kind of cartoons. And then it's the scene where he's outside of Eddie Valiant's office smoking a stogie in the baby carriage.
Right. And he's got the hot assistant.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah.
Just slapping her on the caboose when she goes to do whatever.
Yeah. What did he say? The problem is I've got a 50-year-old brain and a
50-year-old lust and a 3-year-old dinky.
Yeah.
Which, it's also too, is watching this, like, there had to have been parents who did let their kids watch this and, like, either didn't care, they were cool with it, or they clearly were not paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I mean, I think, you know, having watched so much animation, probably, you know, my favorite thing about a lot of it is when they do just make a kid's movie.
Yeah.
You know, and I think probably my favorite most recent example is the Curious George. with Will Ferrell. It's that through and through. There's no double entendres.
Yeah.
There's no innuendo. It's just through and through a kid's movie. And you know, I shied away from the Shrek movies at first because they're marketed as kids movies when they came out, but really you watch it and it's just like, no, this is for the adults taking the kids to the movie.
Well, especially the first one, John Lithgow's character is just a running tiny dick joke.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The entire time.
Yeah.
Poor Lord Farquaad.
Yeah. But I kind of had marked that as like the flagship of kids movies with that were trying, you know, they were trying to cater to the parents and the audience. But
yeah, certainly.
But this,
well, and Pixar to an extent too does the same thing.
They do, yeah. But this obviously was made well before any of that.
Yeah,
and
certainly predates all those.
Yeah, and it's right up there with there's plenty of stuff for the kids. There's plenty of stuff for the parents. And,
yeah,
you know. I'm sure if you're a parent, you're probably just happy that your kid's sitting still and shutting
just
up
chilling
for
out, not,
2 hours.
Not yelling for about whatever toys or bullshit.
Right.
One of the other great things, too, I was talking with a friend about this recently, and it's been pointed out, like, and written about numerous times, is how this very much plays out, like, against a very silly backdrop. Essentially, Chinatown with cartoons. To a point with that plot that like you're not 100% really clear on even after they explain it and like your tough and grizzled detective, although this has a much happier ending than Chinatown.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah, I mean that's pretty interesting. You know, Eddie Valiant almost and this is, I guess, back to growing up, I think one of the big staples was Prairie Home Companion,
mm-hmm.
The Garrison Keillor radio show.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. And I couldn't help but think of Guy Noir, mm-hmm. The Private Eye character that he did on that show. When I saw Eddie Valiant, it's like, you know, the whole thing of like there's this guy that's investigating something like supposedly sinister, but really it's rather harmless. And, comical most of the time. And I thought that was, you know, that's a excellent way to bring kind of like a dark humor side, but
mm-hmm.
not get too crazy with it.
Yeah. Or also, you talked about like the Guy Noir thing, Prairie Home. Like Eddie Valiant is such a, somebody write down like 10 names that you would give a detective in one of these kinds of movies. And bam, like, Sam Spade, bam, Eddie Valiant.
Yeah.
And it very much fits into that. And, of course, like, all the other tropes are there, too. Like, him being an alcoholic, him having, like, the dark secret slash past, like, his brother being killed by a toon, him just despising his job.
Yeah.
I also, like, that there's the sort of allegory for racism going on here. Because like the very first time you see Eddie Valiant is right after the end of the Baby Herman cartoon, when Roger Rabbit has blown his tape by seeing birds flying around his head instead of stars when
right.
the refrigerator
yeah.
falls on. And the first thing you see Eddie Valiant do is just shake his head in disgust and go, "Tunes." The way somebody would say the N-word. And I was like, alright, man, okay. That's very much what this is. But then you see how the Tunes interact with people throughout the rest of the movie, and with the exception of someone like a Jessica Rabbit type figure, they're in subservient roles in the real world. Like, they're either entertainers, or they're bartenders, or they're bouncers. There's no, like, cartoon mayor in the real world or anything like that. So it's definitely interesting the parallels that are drawn that, and they're very much second-class citizens in this movie, and that's why they all are in Toontown, because that's essentially the place where they can do their thing.
I mean, is Toontown the ghetto? Is that... It's the trap?
I mean, to a point, it could definitely be looked at that way.
Man, that's a whole another level of this film, which is hilarious. I mean, not... I don't want to say hilarious, but...
Ladies and gentlemen, Brad Cosman accidentally racist.
It's interesting.
Yeah, for absolutely. Sure.
And I mean, especially for what, this was 88?
Yeah, this is 88 when the movie came out.
And it's supposedly
set... And the book was written in 81.
Okay, and supposedly it's set in what, the pre-50s?
Yeah, definitely pre-50s. So let's see really quick. 1947. Yeah, so it's post-World War II.
Okay.
But yeah. So it's even right around the time where, like, racial tensions hadn't quite risen to, like, the point of, like, the Civil Rights Movement and everything. But they definitely were there, just not in the public eye so much, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really... that's an interesting take, and now that you've pointed out, it is actually very evident when you think about all the stuff that was going on.
Well, and then with the character of Judge Doom, that even adds another layer to it, because initially with the dip, you see him just like, oh, no, this guy is just, like, Hitler for cartoon characters. But then you find out that he is a toon.
Right.
Then you're just like, oh, man. Christ, how fucking terrifying is that reveal? Like, the first time you see cartoon eyes superimposed on Christopher Lloyd's head with that weird fucking haircut that he has.
Yeah, that's... I mean, that's... It's to me, it's not unlike when the Ark of the Covenant gets opened
in
Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that's like, I mean, that's terrifying when you see faces melt.
Yeah.
This is like kind of the same thing. It's like, you know, it's powerful.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's not as scary for me now as it was when I was a kid, because I remember like seeing this as a kid and like the laugh, like that high pitched voice, I was like, why would anyone let a child watch this? Unless they're like, let's see. My child did something I don't like today. What will I give them? Oh, I know. Fucking nightmares. so it's... yeah, it's not as bad as it was now that I'm older. Maybe because I've been exposed to some of the harsher realities and fears and pains that the world has to offer an adult man, but it definitely still is a fucked up, freaky scene to watch.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, I think some of, you know, the best children's movies have those moments.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
like the terror.
Yeah, and I mean, if we time Miyazaki for sure, like there's
some
dark stuff in that. But even going back to, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, that tunnel scene.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the boat.
The boat ride, that was a nightmare.
Scarring.
Yeah, that was scarring as a kid. Yeah. Even something as innocent as, like, Milo Notice.
Oh, my God.
There's some really dark stuff in Milo Notice.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to talk about, like, an innocent children's film, yes, but there's that. And, well, there was an article a while ago about how... Neverending Story, like, ruined a whole generation because the horse...
The Swamp of Sadness?
Yeah, the horse just gives up and dies in the swamp.
We're all just that horse.
But I guess most of us chose not to give up.
Yeah, most of us were better than that horse.
Yeah.
Some of us are that horse.
Some of us are still...
We can't all be a Treyu, man. But yeah, I definitely agree. I think there's something to that, the children's movies having those moments of reality, of darkness. To me, that's why I love Pixar movies so much.
Yeah.
Because especially when they did something like Up, and they're like, hey, what do we do? Oh, let's fucking stick a knife in and twist in the first 10 minutes of the movie. You like cars? Let's see what happens when we sucker punch you in your fucking heart right out the gate.
Well, it was something like, what? There were 3 changes of sad.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Just right in the first, like, 10 or 15 minutes. It's just like, oh, it's sad, and then it gets worse, and then it's worse again.
I think the most effective one for me still is in Toy Story 3, which is my favorite of the Toy Story movies. And honestly, I go back and forth on what my favorite Pixar movie is, but Toy Story 3 has been up there constantly since it came out. And there's that moment with Ned Beatty's character, with Lotso Huggenbear, went towards the end when they're escaping, and he just starts yelling. He's like, "We're all trash. He's like, we don't deserve anything good. She left us." Just like, oh God. Why does this bear know how I feel about myself? Like, he's been abandoned, he's been broken, he's damaged goods, and he fucking knows that. And that's maybe the scariest thing, is when you come to terms with that, and you convince yourself in your head that you don't deserve good things. It's like, oh, fuck you, Pixar. Fuck you for cutting to the heart of you sons of bitches.
They're good at that.
Yeah,
they're really
absolutely.
Good at that. But I mean, like, I think in juxtaposition to those dark moments that, you know, as it seems to be kind of a recurring theme in children's movies, there's always just the melt your heart moment.
Yeah.
So for you, what's that in this movie?
In this movie? Man, I'm hard pressed to think of it. Because, like, you've got that moment of acceptance. When Eddie kisses Roger at the end, like as a goop, like I don't feel like that does it is what it is necessarily. God, I'm trying to think. Do you have one?
Well, honestly, I mean, I think it was. It's so simple, and it's maybe not as big as some of the other stuff in the film, but. It's that same scene, and Jessica says to Roger, "Let's go home.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you a carrot cake."
Uh-huh.
And like throughout this whole movie, you've seen these lovers that are basically torn apart.
Yeah.
And then, but at the end, you know, it's "Let's go home, and I'm going to make you a carrot cake because you're a rabbit, and I know what rabbits want.
Yeah,
it's carrots.
It's that carrot.
It's not my curvy body. It's carrots.
Yeah." I think, oh man, I still don't have like considered the light moment. I know one moment that like it always resonates with me is the first time you see Eddie Valiant go back to his office and you see that the sign is Valiant and Valiant. You know that at one point it wasn't just him,
right.
And then like it pans over and you see all like when he's going through the photos he took of Jessica Rabbit and Marvin Acme. And then he sees the picture of him and his brother at the beach together. And then it pans over and you see, like the detective sign, like, in their cases together and all that stuff. And then, like, the thing about them, like, traveling the circus with their dad, who was a clown. And you see the dust that's collected over it, too. So, like, you know that it's been a long time since his brother has been killed. And that, like, he still has not learned how to cope with that. To the point where he's slumming it and he's taking these jobs, basically hack jobs that a detective would take instead of like working on real cases. It's like, hey, go snoop on this person that we think is cheating on their husband or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like this is the bottom of the barrel when you do that kind of work, essentially.
Right.
But yeah, I still have not come up with the heartwarming moment.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's in there.
I mean, I think, yeah, that scene where it shows his brother's desk, I think that's pretty...
That's rough, yeah.
It is. It's kind of rough. I mean, it's maybe the best of the dark and the heartwarming.
Yeah.
All in
yeah.
one scene.
Because you know that at one point, like, he did care about, like, tunes.
Oh, yeah.
If a tune dropped a piano on my brother in an alley, I probably wouldn't be too inclined to help him either. So I totally understand where he's coming from.
Right. Yeah. And then maybe I'm you brought up the whole racial thing earlier, and that's like that's a whole nother level to that.
Yeah,
is, you know, at the end of the movie, there's total acceptance from Eddie towards the, you know, all the Toon characters, and even though they killed his brother, I mean,
you know, it's not all of them. It's right, like it's one Toon's actions doesn't represent every person that does that.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, real talk.
Real talk.
How much of a chub did you get the first time you saw Jessica Rabbit, bro?
That's a really awkward boner.
It's, oh man, especially watching it again. The, like, in terms of just body proportion, it's so weird how she's drawn.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
she's kind of an S.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's, but, which is, like, especially seeing it now, it's like, I mean, I get why cartoon characters think she's attractive. I get why like non-cartoon characters think she's attractive. But it's, yeah, it's just, it's so bizarre. Like, because your only other real frame of reference for a cartoon female is when you see Betty Boop.
Right.
Very briefly. And of course, like, those aren't even remotely realistic proportions because her head looks like a bobblehead's would.
Right.
But her, at least in terms of like her body and everything, it's relatively normal proportions from the shoulders down.
Mm.
But then Jessica Rabbit is like, we just figured we'd paint red and flesh colors on a shape and just animate it however.
Yeah.
So that's something I'd never noticed before this most recent watch. It's just when I was like, man, like, because you see, like, pictures of her now and everything, like, fan art and whatever, and you're just like, God, I don't remember her being drawn so weirdly, I guess.
Right. Well, and I think you bring up the point where the two of them are basically next to each other, Betty Boop and Jessica Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some pretty big commentary there.
Yeah, certainly.
I mean, if you think about the time period when Betty Boop would have been popular,
mm-hmm.
and then you think about when this movie was made, which is, you know, the late 80s.
Yeah.
And if you look at the history of cartooning between those in those decades, and also kind of the history of culture in general.
Yeah, certainly.
And how you portray sex.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Betty Boop and you know, there's some allure there, but yeah, she does have this weirdly large head.
Yeah, and but hers is more demure.
Yeah, it's too. Yeah, but the innuendo is thick, and you have to kind of be smart to like get the sex that she's selling. Whereas Jessica Rabbit, it's all about
it's
eye
just
candy,
all up front.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I think you can see that pattern. You know, if you look at any comic book series, you know,
yeah,
in that
absolutely.
Same time comparison, you look at the superheroes of the 80s versus, you know,
yeah.
well before that, and you know, all the females in from the 80s on are just large-breasted, big-butted women.
Yeah, with just narrow hips and just uncomfortable body proportions.
Right, and next to no clothing. And,
yeah.
And, you know, how are we expected to believe that they can kick so much ass with
yeah.
back problems and,
yep.
and I don't know whatever other problems
or
such a body shape would allow,
or that for some reason this female superhero doesn't need to wear body armor or any kind of protective clothing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, oh man, that's a whole fucking thing to get into.
It is.
Well, it's also, I like that you mentioned the history of animation, how it changed, because you look like the 70s and the 80s, you have the rise of people like Ralph Bakshi, who did, like, First the Cat and some other pretty adult things in terms of animation, heavy metal,
yeah.
of course, coming out in that time as well. I want to say R. Crumb, if I'm remembering right. Some of his shit.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely definitely a swing towards the more lewd, the way less subtle kind of approaches to sexuality in terms of animation and cartooning. I think it's a really interesting point that you bring up, the difference between Betty Boop and Jessica Rabbit. That's kind of a really cool counterpoint to bring in there.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it not just in cartooning and animation. I mean, like, if you think about how society behaved.
Yeah, certainly. Just in pop culture times. In general.
Yeah, just
absolutely.
All of it. It's kind of crazy. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to say that I pine for days that I never knew, but
yeah,
I kind of do.
Understandable. Isn't it great that in 2015 sexism is just completely dead? We got rid of it.
We got rid of it. Go.
Nobody has to worry about this shit anymore.
No, it's fantastic.
No, guys, if you're listening to this in the future, it got worse somehow. And it's just a huge fucking bummer.
Right.
Oh, man. Are there any other points you wanted to hit on before we get to wrapping it up? Anything else that jumps out at you that you wanted to hit on in the movie?
I don't know. It's so great to see, like, a lot of... I mean, we talked about how Warner Brothers and Disney are on the same screen together. And with that, I mean, not only do you see all those characters together, but it's really great to see all the shticks.
Yeah.
From not just those characters, but from a lot of different sources all coming into play. Eddie Valiant, I mean, there's moments on there where he's definitely drawing from the Three Stooges and, you know, that kind of, you know, physical humor. And it's a really great mashup of a lot of different comedic sources.
Yeah.
And I think it's really smart. I guess that'd be, like, my biggest takeaway is it's really fun.
Good.
For a lot of reasons.
There's something I just thought of jumped into my head, too, tonight you mentioned it. There was a period between this, probably over the course of the next 7-8 years, where there were a couple of live-action animation movies combined. So there was this, obviously, Cool World. With Brad Pitt and Gabriel Byrne and Kim Basinger, which I rewatched in the last, I want to say, year or two, because it was on Netflix. Just like Who Framed Roger Rabbit is, by the way, so you guys can watch it. I shouldn't have said that at the top of the episode instead of buried it here at the dick end of it. But yeah, Cool World's a fucking weird movie. Like, it's definitely a really interesting concept, and it kind of plays very, very much... close to that same idea of, like, Toontown existing and everything. And then, of course, there's Space Jam.
Right.
I'm trying to think, like...
What a solid film that is.
I'm trying to think of, like, the last time that there's been, like, a major, like, animation and live action release. And I'm sure there have been some, like, but it's probably, like, more independently released shit, because, like, I'm having a hard time thinking of anything.
Does a Scanner Darkly count?
I think a Scanner Darkly counts at least a little bit.
Maybe a little?
Like, because it's animated over live actors, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that at least partially counts. Okay. And that is a super fucking cool movie.
Yeah. I want to say since CGI, but this came out after CGI. I mean, you had a lot of computer-generated stuff in the late 70s. Someone should do that. Hollywood, get on this.
Yeah, get to it.
Bring it back.
Oh, Looney Tunes back in action. That's the last one I can think of.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that one, I actually don't hate it necessarily. Yeah. It's definitely weird. I think I have a soft spot for it solely because Joe Dante, the same guy that did the Gremlins movies and Small Soldiers, which is one of my favorite goddamn movies, did that. So it's definitely a weird, kind of interesting movie.
Yeah. Well, and I think who... Probably when it started and you see... when you, I mean, initially it's just the cartoon. Mm-hmm. But then you see, you know, the live actors come in, and initially I just couldn't stop thinking of, I forget the song, but is it Whitney Houston? The music video with
Cool Cat? You're thinking of Paula Abdul,
that's right,
with
yes.
Opposite Attract with yes. MC Scat Cat.
Yes, MC Scat Cat.
Yep.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I'm ashamed that I didn't remember it, because it's one of my favorite music videos.
It was a pretty great music video.
Mainly because it's so absurd, but so is this movie.
Very much so. I think we're going to go ahead and wrap it up with our favorite moments.
Favorite moments.
So,
okay.
Ryan, lay it on me.
Favorite moments.
Favorite scene, whatever.
Favorite
what
scene.
You.
I mean, I think the scene where we touched on this, and a lot happens in that scene, but mm-hmm. they're in, I guess a club,
mm-hmm.
and it's where you see the Donald and Daffy thing.
Yeah.
You see that exchange. You see Betty Boop. You get introduced to the guy that gets murdered,
mm-hmm.
and he's a ridiculous character in himself.
Yeah.
And then it's also the introduction, basically, of Jessica Rabbit. And just so much happens in that one setting that I think is, like, that's a really pivotal point in the
yeah,
film.
Yeah, certainly.
And like you said, I mean, there's a lot of great things that happen in that place, and I think that's probably my favorite.
Cool.
Right there.
That's
yeah.
a Michael Cena stuff. For me, I think it's either mentioned earlier, the Daffy and Donald piano duel. I also really like everything in Toontown is great, but I'm particularly fond of Eddie's slapstick routine at the end. That he uses to kill the weasels by making them laugh themselves to death. Just like, I am always impressed when people can do physical comedy on that scale.
Right.
And you'd mentioned like the idea of, like the Three Stooges thing earlier, and like kind of doing pratfalls, and just like, and clearly it's a stunt double in some of those things. So I can't possibly imagine Bob Hoskins is doing multiple backhand springs, but just like all the leaping around and just being a goofball, and he just fucking commits to it too. Like he sells it so hard. So like when you see him jump up on a pogo stick and smash his head into a lamp and get electrocuted, when you see him juggle bowling balls and then just drop each one in succession on his head,
yeah,
it's like, God, this fuck, man. Like, some of the dumbest things in the world can work if the actor commits to it 100%. And Bob Hoskins absolutely does that. And he's certainly known more as a dramatic actor than anything else. But to see him have, like, physical comedy chops is really fucking cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love that scene a lot.
That is a good one. Yeah.
Cool. All right, well, I think we're going to wrap it up there.
Awesome.
Brian Kostman, thank you for coming on, doing the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, buddy. Thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to How Have You Not Seen This. If you enjoyed the podcast, like the page on Facebook. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also leave us a rating or a review. If you're interested in donating to the podcast, you can do so through the PayPal link at the Podomatic website, howhaveyounotseenthis.podomatic.com. You can also send any questions, comments for the show to howhaveyounotseenthispodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.